Digamlang gue kayak cuman cinta meka
wawo woy tambo punga
nanishima wawo apa sani.
Lene Adolfsen. Nalina. Alone Adolfsen. Ja. Bodil Ede.
Ja.
Ja. Inge Hansen. Ja. Norma Husiersen. No. Anne Marie Hø.
Ja.
It is Agas. Agas little sister.
I suppose that the next years to come will be full of problems in connection with the Greenland Ecomo that are being introduced from the next year. There would be really great problems in connection with adaptation. But I think it was necessary to make the Greenlandic people to co-responsible for their future and for their own fate. Sometimes in connection with Greenland you have to be optimists even if you can see why.
A traveller many years ago described Greenland as a gigantic desert of ice fringed with green, sitting astride the roof of the world. And as far as it goes, it is indeed a fairly apt description of the country. The Eskimos themselves, many centuries ago, called their country Klachlit Nunat, which means the land of the people. It's a name Greenlanders today are intensely proud of, because it tells the world almost as much about the people themselves as it does about their country. There are only 50,000 of them living in a country larger than all of Western Europe put together, and their awesomely beautiful and challenging land is their world. It's a world which has, however, been rocketed literally from the Ice Age to the Jet Age in a single generation, and the pressures on its people are truly enormous. The latter-day traveller, the tourist, going to Greenland today, can see a country of extraordinary and elemental beauty. All he sees usually, however, is the tip of the iceberg. Beneath the surface is a country, a culture, a civilization, which may not survive another generation.
Our culture is very much different from Danish or other Europeans, and therefore there are a conflict there. Your culture your way of thinking is your way of thinking and your culture is not boxes, yellow boxes made of wood, and it is not working. It is not that way that you go to your job at 8 o'clock and you are and you have to go home at 6 o'clock, or in that way. Our culture is, you know, we are hunting people, fishing, and we, it is not the, our culture is not so civilized as the European. It is the Danish people who always had the decision of whatever you can think about. Your jobs, he was your boss. He is also always your boss wherever you walk, work. He decides when you have to work and when you have to leave, or in what way you have to behave. And that is not good for a man. If you think in another way, and a Danish man came to you and said, "You have to do this like this," and then the Greenlander says, "Oh yes, he wanted so. I have to do it then." If you have been to a party, a Greenlandic party, some have birthday, and it took the whole night, and it was nice, and then you perhaps don't go to your work at 8 o'clock or so, but and then the boss will say to you, why didn't you come? Then the Greenlander can't explain his reason why he didn't come, and therefore perhaps the Danish will say, "You're not good and you have to leave, and I don't want you here in my job," and the Greenlanders can't understand why am I now I am unemployed.
Looking backwards, you must say, well, we probably did something wrong, because to be able to industrialize the manufacturing of fish, etc., you had to concentrate production in certain towns, and the population had to move if they wanted this kind of employment. But at every stage, you tried to do the best things you could to solve the problems and meet the wishes of the Greenlandic population. But I think also there, from both sides, it's agreed that this policy has created problems, and in that sense you can say mistakes have been made, but you still try to do your best at every single point. Maybe you can't even know how Home Rule is going to function, but today we think this is, and the Greenlanders think, this is a good solution for Greenland, but nobody can know whether in 5 years some people would come and tell us this wasn't a very good idea, just like everybody's, just like many people are saying now, we did mistakes in the past, even though at the point of time when the decision was made, we tried to do our best.
Many Greenlanders have said to us that they feel that they are, in their own country, they are second-class citizens. Do you think that they have been or still are being discriminated against, are being made feel this way?
Well, discriminated, you haven't got any, discrimination that anybody has decided upon, so to speak. There is this need for import of a rather large amount of skilled manpower, personal, and which means that in important positions you have many Danes in most of the important positions, and you have had a Ministry for Greenland which has been responsible for everything. And this, of course, even though Denmark spend this money, etc., in Greenland, and even though you consult the provincial council, inevitably you will have a feeling of Danish dominance as a consequence of this system. This is going to be changed with Home Rule, because the orders will, at any rate, come from Greenlandic politicians. And
well, as the Greenlanders themselves will freely admit, the £120 million a year they get is very important to them. But nevertheless, they do have feeling that they are in some way being exploited by the Danes.
That I don't think is fair at all. I mean, this money is spent. And you must also say that income fishing, as I said, was the natural, from the side of nature, the most important trade in Greenland. And this is a deficit trade. Denmark covers a deficit in fishing of around 80 million crowns per year, which is 8 million pounds sterling. And this means that people in this trade in Greenland get an income which is subsidized by 8 million pounds sterling per year, because this is a deficit of that sector. That I wouldn't call exploitation, that I would rather call solidarity with the Greenlandic population, because Denmark really feels an obligation to uphold a certain standard of living in Greenland. And this is proved by the fact that we continue this capital transfer to Greenland. I'm not saying this to boast of what the Danes are doing, but it's not fair to talk of any of exploitation in that sense.
I think personally that the Danish state has wanted always to do the best in this transition. They have not always succeeded. You couldn't expect it to succeed all the time. So nowadays, we are trying, we, meaning the Greenlanders and the Danes, to introduce home rule. And, well, I guess the best thing you could say about it is that we hope for the best. All good wills hope for the best in Greenland and in Denmark. Well, to a certain degree, I think that Denmark has been a colonial power, but I don't think there's so much ill will in it as some people think there has been. I have seen Greenland so many times, and I've seen goodwill and stupidity, but not so much ill will. The colonial powers are not always ill-willing, but some of the persons, of course, are quite stupid.
Do you think that people in Denmark, people in Europe, people in Ireland should be concerned about the plight of the Eskimo today?
Yes, definitely, and they are much too little. I think that the minorities of the world are always important. The majorities are the most important, perhaps, but the minorities are very important. I dare say that you, as an Irishman, must have an opinion on this question. The minorities of the North are the Eskimos and the Indians. In these years, they're getting together not to conquer the world, but to have a decent living, as they want to. What's wrong with that? I can see nothing wrong. They want to, where it is possible, to go hunting, to catch fish. Why are they not allowed? Also in the case, if you found an oil well, for instance, in Alaska, or in Canada, or in Greenland, you have to talk to the Eskimos about it. They live there. It's their country. Why should they be prevented? Why shouldn't they have their living because you, a European or European country, found an oil well? It is important for these people. They have a right to exist on this earth, as well as you, the Irish, and we, the Danes, and the Canadians, and everybody else has. That must be understood. Oil is not all important. People are.
Sutter, It is a song about a man living up north who is drinking. He drinks his living, and he drinks always. And he, even if he has no money, he borrowed the money from other people, and then so he can buy the bottle and drink it. Then he drank too much, and then at last he died of because of that. And then it is, that's the end of the song.
Jeg tror ikke, altså det er en gammel skrøn, den her. Og det store tal, der fremgår i statistikkerne, det bygger på de samme problemer, som har de samme kunstsygdomme.
Tina says that...
om igen.
All right, derved, the statistics are right in one way. But the figures are so high because it's the same people coming again and again and again and again. I mean, all Godthåb don't have venereal diseases, but some people have. And it's the same people, you know, coming again and again to the doctors. They, you know, if they get penicillinium and they are getting all right in 3 weeks, it won't take more than a month, and they're back again. That's why the figures are as high as they are. But 8,000 people... Yeah. Is it true? Er det rigtigt, at der er 8.000 mennesker?
Jeg havde talt her i sidste semester, men den kan jeg altså ikke
Nej.
Huske. En gang i 60'erne.
There's one thing we must remember, we just discussed this, and that is until 19, about 60 or something like that, no Greenlander had a venereal disease. It came with the Danes, and with the Danes, for example, who came from Denmark and who worked up there for a long period or a short period, and sailors coming, a lot of foreign sailors to Greenland before 1960, they didn't know 1970 they didn't know syphilis, for example, not at all. It came with the foreigners. The Greenlanders had no venereal diseases before the foreigners came.
Måske for at understrege, kan vi da sige, at de fleste er mænd, dem der har kønssygdomme i dag.
Yeah. Most of the people having venereal diseases are men. It's the men. So that tells maybe a little about it. I mean, it's not the... Okay.
Så måske nu lidt om noget af den grønlandske pige, som skulle være så sluppeløs.
Yeah. Antina says that it tells maybe a little about the Greenlandic girl who have there are rumors that they go and with everybody. They don't. They don't.
There were, for instance, in a town, we used the term town in Greenland for settlements of 3,000 people. They were committed suicides, 12 a year. About. It is very, very high number for communities or the science. I think it is necessary to examine the causes of the suicides in Greenland. There are in fact too many of them.
She had a cousin who worked a lot with the young people and with some special party like ours. It started in Denmark, and suicide. The 11th of January 76. It was very common a few years ago. It's because of all these problems, political problems and family problems and alcohol problems, things like that. It was when I can explain it that way. It was because of all these problems you have got at these days.
And did some other young people commit suicide immediately after he killed himself in sympathy with what he was doing?
At that time, I know I was in Denmark too, and I knew him. In the running of 3 months or 4 months, three of young people I knew became suicide. I think he was number two of these three people.
Was Acker very shocked when he committed suicide, or did she think this might happen?
Of course she was shocked when she heard it, but she also thought of that he was strong enough to do it. We think that people must be very strong to become suicide, because they couldn't just choose any other way to live. That's what she explained of it.
And in some way, then, does she admire him for having had the courage to take his own life when he could no longer live here?
Yes, we can put it that way. It must be very, he must be very strong with himself to do it. People must be this. I think some of the young people who become suicide, they think of it in a long way. And think as what can we else do? What can we do without doing that, without killing ourselves? But at last, they couldn't find any other way to do it.
Does Acker think that he felt or he thought he was doing something important for Greenland when he committed suicide?
Of course, he lived a very strong life. We don't call it impulsive, but in a way, he lived very strongly, and when he did that. It must be because of that he wanted to show the world that he could do things just like he likes them. He could do. He was a free man to do things. That's why he did that.
This song we are going to sing now is a children's song, and it is a very popular song. En du en trist. En du har, du bliver sædret i sæver i Norar. I nækkenagt og udhjælagt og er gudting nu af. Er sjært og rigtig.
What about all of the children here in the class? What careers are they likely to study for? What kind of work are they eventually going to end up doing?
Nurse, Amma, traffic assistant working in the airport with the helicopters and journalists. Er det så du har 60 seng inde? Ja.
Well, do they think they're going to be able to get these jobs here, or will they have to leave the town?
Yes, they know that. They have to leave Julianehåb if they want to learn something.
Would they like to travel and see a little of the world before they finally settle down in Julianehåb?
Yes, they are very interested to see the world and to see Denmark and other places before they went back.
And what countries in particular would they like to visit?
America, Hawaii, England, Asia, India, China,
Australia.
Well, you haven't mentioned Ireland so far. Do they know of the existence of Ireland? Have they ever heard of Ireland, or what have they heard about Ireland?
Yeah. They call it England, then they also think about Ireland too when they say it England. But they have read something about Ireland before in their book.
What kind of things have they heard about Ireland?
War. What do you call it? The war between Catholics and Protestants. And the war. And their rebellion, or what, I don't know what you call them. And they know it from the TV. And the radio too.
I can remember then I was about 5-6 years. Then my father said to me that I should try to learn the Danish language, because he thought that when I have learned the Danish language, then I would have better possibilities to get a more well-paid job in Greenland. I think that I was about 18 before I could have a real discussion with a Dane. And now I have learned it, but sometimes I can't get some Danish words. I have read somewhere that one of the most difficult languages in the world is Dane. So in a way, I'm very proud that I have learned it.
Growing up in the village of Holsteinberg with your father running the local blacksmith shop there, did you have a happy childhood? What are your memories of your childhood?
Well, I think that it was a very normal childhood I had in Holsteinberg. I was playing with my friends, and in the winters we what do you call it? Stood in skis, at skis.
You learned how to ski?
Yes, and I had some dogs, and we made several journeys with my dogs and sled. And I learned to hunt and fish. I had an old uncle who learned me to fish and hunt. And I was when I was 5 years, I was decided to get a fisher and hunter. But at the same time, my father told me that I should learn the Danish language. But I was decided to get a hunter and fisher. But my uncle drowned when I was 6 years old. And I was very unhappy, and from this time I didn't want to become hunter and fisher.
What age were you when you learned to handle a pack of huskies and a sledge?
I was 3 or 4 years. When I got my first dog, and this dog was my own, and I had the responsibility of this dog when I was 3 years old.
In most other countries in the world, children would be playing with toys at that age, but you were learning how to handle, how to train a dog at 3 years of age.
Of course, I have toys, and it was a very beautiful mix of Eskimo toys and European toys. I have cars and. And I also had an harpoon, and I had bow and arrows also.
Jens, you were learning how to handle a pack of dogs and a sledge at 3. You then went on to learn how to fish and to hunt. What did you fish for? What did you hunt for?
Well, I was fishing cats and halibuts, and I hunting eiders and other seabirds. But I was 8 years old when I got my first rifle, and from this time I was learned up to handle and rifle by my father and my other uncle.
Impressions are really all any journalist can hope to bring back from a foreign land. The pretension of attempting anything more systematic or definitively complete would not only be folly but dishonest. So we've preferred to present Greenland through the voices of its people rather than apply any value judgments of our own. The question the world now has to ask itself is how it can play a part in creating a new society that can preserve the values that gave Greenland its Eskimo name, Chlachlit Nunat, the land of the people. One of the greatest of all the people was Odach. He wasn't a great soldier or a great statesman or even a great scholar, but he was, to his tribe, one of the best of all men. He travelled with Peary to the North Pole in 1911 and was later uprooted from his home by the Americans when they built their huge airbase at Thule. He's dead now, but to the Inuit people of the world, his philosophy and his vision of life still has a breathtaking clarity. He's warmly and sensitively remembered by an old friend of his, a Dane who spent many years in Greenland, Bent Jensen.
Otak was for many years a chief of his tribe. He was the greatest huntsman, and in his younger days, they told me that he was a shaman, which was very respected in those days, sort of a priest of the tribe. You couldn't become a priest or shaman if you weren't beforehand an important man, particularly a great huntsman, as Otak was. Also, he had the spirits, I think they call it. He had the spirits. He could help with them in cases of diseases. He could tell the future. That was what he did in his younger days. And also, as I said, he was a great huntsman, which, of course, is all important in the northern part of Greenland, in the Arctic area that is covered by ice for most months of the year. The whole tribe depended on the huntsmen, the wives, the older ones, the children. Everybody, all of them depended on the hunting of ice bear, of seal, walrus, and so on. If they didn't get them, if there was a bad year, people would die. It is as simple as that. So you depended on the great huntsman. He was one of them. He was one of the best. That I knew beforehand. And when I saw him, this small, broad-shouldered, dark man, he was as dark almost as a mulatto or a Negro even, because of the eternal sun. The sun all the time during 6 months of the year, and the rest of the year, as we know, it is darkness all the time. Unimpressive, of course, in clothing, because it was summer when I was there. In wintertime, you're dressed up there in ice bear skins, which is, of course, certainly more impressive. But that day, when I saw him, he was in flabbily dressed, I guess you would call it, which didn't make him a lesser huntsman, did it? No, of course not. So he was a small, great man. I was about, I don't know, several inches higher than he was. But he was a greater man. I was a smaller man in that respect.
And it was his vision of life, I think, that particularly impressed you. You obviously were impressed by his prowess as a huntsman, but his philosophy really seemed to catch your imagination.
It did, yes. Because in our part of the world, we are competing all the time. He had never been competing. Now he had been moved from one place to another. I thought beforehand he might have been a little humiliated, this proud old man. But he would never tell me. I knew that. He might have suggested it. He wouldn't tell straight out. I asked him what his view of life was. And again he looked far in the horizon, because the Eskimos take their time. This is one thing. If You ask an Eskimo to tell a story. He believes that you are really interested in this story. So he tries to take his time. If you can make a story last an hour, you are a better storyteller than if it only lasts half an hour. Well, this was a simple question. It certainly couldn't last half an hour. But still, he looked far into the horizon and said, "Life is changeable. One loves it." That impressed me. It still impresses me. I think of it from time to time. Because we all have a changeable life, but we are not always so happy. I'm not sure even that Otak is happy or was happy. He's dead now. But maybe we could learn a lesson from old Otak, couldn't we?